Let's do this.
If you have close relationships with your coworkers, you are actually much more productive at work. Friendships are these relationships which, when you relate to somebody on that level, it opens up a different part of you.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of On Point. I'm your host, Taylor Burke, and on today's episode, we are joined by Aaron Falconer. Aaron has had a varied career that includes screenplay writer, stand-up comedian, political consultant, and is now proudly heavily invested in the online blogging world. Today, she joins us to discuss her book that came out earlier this year called How to Break Up With Your Friends. Hi, Aaron. How are you?
Good. Hi, Taylor. Thanks for having me on the show.
We are so excited. Excited for you to be here. There's so much to discuss. Earlier this year, you dropped out your second book, and it's much more than just about breaking up with your friends. You talk about creating new friendships and how you can be a better friend and even doing better with your current friendships.
Right. Yeah. So the title of the book is, as you just said, How to Break Up With Your Friends. But there are 10 chapters and there's only one chapter actually on how to break up with your friends. There are 9 on really the importance of friendship, not just, you know, nice to have, but very good for your physical well-being, your emotional and psychological well-being, as well as how to do friendship, you know, within your current friendships a whole lot better. And so, you know, I chose that title not because you need to go through your contact list with a machete, but rather just to draw kind of in a real kind of shocking or jarring way, this concept of analyzing friendships to the forefront of your mind, because that's one of the big problems, is not that we don't know how to do anything about friendships. We're behind that even. We're not even in the process of auditing or looking at these types of relationships in the same way that we do, let's say, a romantic relationship or a family relationship, by not really being intentional and alive and active in these relationships. This is kind of the one category of relationship that we kind of view as nice to have and should keep, you know, just keep giving. And in reality, you know, any relationship worth its salt takes work, takes grit, takes vulnerability, and you need to make choices around it. Like, should I still be in this? How could I be doing this? Is this relationship representative of who I am now and how I want to be seen now, not just, you know, the 10 years ago when I got into it, right? And I also think this idea, you know, that these are relationships that you really choose. And of course you choose your romantic partner, but once you kind of say, if you're into marriage, once you say your vows, you kind of, of course you could divorce, but the idea is that you've chosen that person and you're not going to unchoose them. Friendships, I think their power is that you choose them and you know that you can choose to get out of them, right? You need to get comfortable knowing you can choose to get out of them. That is their power. When you don't have that option on the table, it dilutes the entire kind of the main stronghold of what friendships do, which is it is an active choice.
How did you learn so much about different friendships? Do you have multiple friends? Was there something that drove you to write this book because something with friendship was going on in your life?
Well, the truth is that I was looking for a follow-up to my first book, which is very, very rooted in the female productivity, kind of female empowerment space. It's called How to Get Shit Done, Why Women Need to Stop Doing Everything So They Can Achieve Anything. And so as I was looking to do a follow-up to that, you know, over the course of 6 or 7 months, I went down a lot of different dead ends and was kind of getting frustrated. And I remember sitting, waiting for one of my friends, who outwardly I would have said is like a BFF, you know, and I was sitting there very irritated because she's always late. And I was sitting there waiting. And I started to think about, boy, my level of irritation is extremely high right now, like very high. And maybe not justified for, okay, so she's half an hour late. But as I started to look at it, I was like, wow, I've been frustrated a lot. And I looked down and instead of, you know, as again, outwardly, I would have said this is BFF, I realized there was like this deep chasm that had grown between us. And not in one big, like, you know, dramatic thing. It was like something that just happened over time, that behaviorally she had done things, I'd never called her out. Maybe the same was true of her to me. I didn't know. But as I sat there waiting, contemplating this, I couldn't believe, you know, my big epiphany was I couldn't believe I hadn't done this before. Like I hadn't looked at not just this relationship, but any of my friends in this way with this critical eye before. And so I started to kind of go down my list of kind of inner circle friends and was very surprised to find that this was not an exception to the rule, this first thing, that there were a lot of feelings of either irritation or frustration, or like I missed the person, even though we were seeing each other a lot, like not a lot of connection. And then with some of them, I just felt nothing at all when I was thinking about it. And that was like my biggest red flag. I was like, irritation, frustration, at least there's something to work with there. When you don't feel anything at all, then that's a real big problem. And how come that relationship is still sort kind of in your world? Mm-hmm. And so when I looked at that, I was like, how is it possible? You know, we are a culture that is obsessed with information about ourselves. We know every calorie we're consuming, every gram of protein. We wear stupid watches that tell us every step we're taking. Marie Kondo has us holding up chairs and sweaters, asking if they bring joy. And yet, you know, this category of people in our lives, our friends, really no eyes on. And when I stopped to think about why that might be, I'm a therapist, and in a classic kind of therapy model, there's individual therapy, there's couples therapy, there's family therapy, but there's no such thing as friendship therapy. And while I'm not necessarily advocating that friend couples run out and find a therapist, although that's not a bad idea if you have a long-standing, very serious relationship with somebody, you know, that's gone over 10, 15 years, that are a deep part of your life, and you can't find your way back to each other, might not be a bad idea. But what it means to me is that out there kind of in the zeitgeist, there's no collectively agreed upon language to navigating conflict within these relationships. There's no blueprint about what a good friendship looks like, how to get into a new friendship, how to get out of an existing friendship. So what ends up happening is we end up kind of minimizing or marginalizing our feelings, pushing them down, getting very over time, either irritated or frustrated or numb to the other person. Because when you kind of numb yourself against one thing, you actually just numb yourself across the board to that person. You can't kind of selectively numb. And then what can happen is you push this down, and then you have these big explosions that are not, you know, the punishment doesn't fit the crime. And that can then blow up a friendship because the other person is like, whoa, are you crazy? Where is this coming from? Mm-hmm. And at that point, it's too much water under the bridge kind of thing. So the idea is to get very intentional about who's in your life, and then also be able to really advocate and demand that you be seen in a certain way, that people show up for you in a certain way, and you them, right? And short of that, you're not executing the full potential of these relationships.
You made a good point, Erin. You said that we treat friendships differently than we treat romantic relationships. When you hear the word break up, you think of a romantic mm-hmm. relationship. You don't really hear that. Right. Hey, I'm going to go have a talk with my friend. I'm going to break up with them, right?
Right.
So tell me why it's so hard to give our friends slack or say, I'm going to break up with a friend, but it's so easy for us to break up with a romantic partner.
Because I think the big difference is that it's just not done, right? So until people start doing it, it feels like it's the chicken and the egg, right? And it feels like, well, this is so strange. Well, it is, because nobody's doing it, but that doesn't mean it has to be, right? And like, if you look at dating from 30 years ago, it was a much different landscape. Now everybody's talking about, you know, very openly, like what they need, what their must-have list is with a romantic partner. You know, they're constantly dialoguing with friends about, what do you think about this? And what do you think about that? And so it's just much more out there, right? And I think also because the ability to also then get into new romantic relationships is so also well-tread, in the sense that if you're single or you've just broken up with somebody and you want to get back out there dating, what do? You put yourself on an app, you turn to your friends and you say, hey, I'm ready to date again. Know anybody? Every time you walk into a bar or a meeting or a restaurant, you're looking around the room being like, okay, could I connect to any of these people here? So all of those steps about getting into a new one are so well established that the fear of getting out of an existing one is also much less. I mean, not to say breaking up with a romantic relationship isn't very, very hard. Of course it is. But there's just so many more processes available for you to help metabolize that. Number one, when you break up with a romantic person, everybody expects there to be a grieving process. Everybody's there for you. Oh my God, how are you feeling? Da, da, da. But if you break up with quote unquote break up with a friend, it's crickets, right? You're not supposed to be grieving. It's like there's no process in place to be able to support breaking up with a friend. And the way that all has to start is just by normalizing it and by saying, I need breaking up with this person to be on the table when I get into the relationship with them. So it ups the stakes, it ups the importance, it ups their value. There's stuff on the line and I know it. Yeah. Right. And I'm choosing to get into it. And so I was interviewed, you know, a couple months ago by Maria Menounos, who, you know, has a big podcast and has done a lot of stuff. And she was talking to me and she said, okay, Erin, I've got this situation. I have a really good friend. She goes, we've literally made plans 10 times in a row, concrete plans, date, place, time, you know, the whole thing. And without fail, the night before or the morning of, she cancels. She goes, look. And she shows me the text and she's like, what do I do with this friendship? And I said, Maria, I've got bad news for you. You're not in a friendship with this person. This person will not commit to you. You're in some kind of weird relationship, but it's not a friendship, right? And so I said, let me put it this way to you. If you were starting to, or if you were dating a guy and you made plans, and she was like, stop, it wouldn't go past two times.
No.
And I was like, because it's just out there. It's collectively understood. Wow. If in a romantic situation, two or three times the guy or the girl, whoever you're trying to, you know, who you're trying to make a plan with,
you go
like, this person's not serious.
No.
This person's not serious about me. Wow. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, but yet with friends, I said, how many times are you going to make plans with this person and expect a different result? Right. So either that person is not really committed to the relationship or there's something really wild going on in her life. And it depends how serious you are about this person. You might give it one more time and say, hey, listen, I've noticed that the last 10 times you've canceled, I need to be clear. Like, I'm not cool with that, but is there something going on with you that is precluding you from like meeting me? Like, is there something going on in your world that I should know about? And like, short of that, you know, you never know. That's the other thing. We create these narratives in our head, like, she's not texting me. Oh, da 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 da. I saw this picture on Instagram. She was this person. Oh, she said she was busy. And we get these like stories going. But the truth of the matter is, so often the narrative we create in our heads is not what's actually happening. And so the only way you can get to that is by directly asking, calling the person out, not in an aggressive way, but like, hey, this is what's happened. I'm offended. I don't feel like there's the same level of commitment to this relationship. The only thing I can think of is there's something else bigger going on in your world that you're having trouble telling me about. And I am here to say, like, if there is, please share it with me. I would love to be there for you. But short of that, if there's not, I need to be in a relationship where the commitment level feels equal. And that, if you just put that in the context of a romantic thing, like, this is second nature. This is automatic pilot for most people, like, knowing, like, this is not acceptable. This doesn't feel right. I'm going to call it out or I'm going to walk away.
You're so right. Breaking up with your friends is taboo. What do you think about social media friends? Because social media is huge right now, right? So what, we break up with a friend or we're not really getting along with a friend, we still see them on our social media platform. Do you have any thoughts about like the friends and the social media aspect of it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a really challenging time because people, you know, have more quote unquote friends than ever. You know, you've got big follower. I mean, even if you don't have like a huge following, if you've got 50 people following you, you know, that's still 50 quote unquote friends.
You're so right.
There's a false sense of being supported there, right? Because unless you're seeing these people in real life or having relationships outside of social media, we're not talking about the same friendships, right? Like the friendships that I'm talking about have minimum requirements for entry, you know? And social media friendships can be good, you know, they can, you know, they can serve purposes for sure. They can also complicate relationships that you also have in real life, to your point. It's really important to have like an open dialogue about that if that's like a problem in the relationship, you know, if it's a source of consternation. If you have ended a friendship, well, you've got to mute that person. Mm-hmm. Like you can't kind of end it.
No. You're allowed to unfollow, or is that petty?
Totally. Well, I think when it's petty is if that's your move to let the other person know you're not talking to them. That's highly passive aggressive. Kind of like in that way, it feels petty or immature. But if you've had a conversation or an email or you come to an understanding with somebody, like for whatever reason, this relationship no longer
serves you.
Is serving me and it's probably not serving you, then there's absolutely no reason to keep following them. I mean, and if there's somebody that has been really dear to you, you, you know, over the years. I think maybe it's like a mute situation, but it's like, again, go back to the boyfriend or girlfriend situation. Like, even if you get out of one of those things kind of amicably, do you really want to have the download, daily download on what they're doing? Does that feel healthy? Not really. Right. And again, it's slightly different. Obviously, there's more complex things going on, you know, but I still think the mechanism is the same. It is complicated, but I definitely, the move of unfollowing somebody because you're unhappy with their behavior, if you're even remotely close with them or have been, that's not the move. But you should be actively taking people that, like, you go, out of your feed, because that stuff really cumulatively takes a lot of energy to process that you probably don't want to be spending in that way.
Mm-hmm. How does coworker, boss, you know, even if it's a small business, how does breaking up with coworkers or putting those boundaries in place the same as friends? Are we allowed to break up with coworkers?
Well, this is where this type of relationship, I mean, there are a lot of dissenting opinions around this. On the one hand, I interviewed a handful of people for the book specifically about this because it's such a tricky topic. There's two schools of thought. There's the school of thought that is like, do not make friends with work people because it's so complicated that, like, and especially do not make friends with somebody that's not on the same, like at the same rank as you. That becomes particularly dangerous. You end up in a bad place with that person. It feels like there could be something punitive, you know, that doesn't mean it happens, but that, you know, there, all of a sudden, if that's an energy's in the mix, that's really bad for your work, you know, environment and ambiance and feeling kind of secure. There are the other school of thought, and there's actually a lot of science to back this up, that when you have friendships or you feel very close, even if it's in the work capacity, in the work, only in the work arena, if you have close relationships with your coworkers, you are actually much more productive at work. You're much happier to be there. You feel generally more loyal and committed to the business itself because you found like-minded people that you like. So it's really, I'm not an expert on that, but it is definitely split into two camps. And I interviewed somebody that was like a founder who had a friendship that went bad. And that's that kind of different dynamic, you know, the different kind of rank. And then I talked to people that like swear by their work wide and like wouldn't have it any other way. And another thing I talk about is in terms of work friendships is it's really easy. And I actually tell a personal story in the book that it's really easy to strike up work friendships around negativity. They kind of start by like, oh man, isn't our boss a dick? Like, isn't so-and-so like, what, he's so out to lunch or she's so out to lunch. And you kind of connect over that, but then that becomes the main connective tissue. And so in other words, in my example in the book, I would like so happily be waiting for lunch to go have lunch with my work friend. And we would just totally, it felt so comfortable and funny to just be like talking, criticizing and saying, oh, this is stupid. And why is he asking me for this? And oh my God, did you see that skirt she's wearing? And it becomes this very kind of like toxic world. And I felt like I'd become very, very close with this colleague of mine. And we would go out for drinks after work. We'd never do anything on the weekend. It was very related to like, do you want to get a drink after work? That was like the maximum. And then I ended up getting this big promotion to be a manager. And I was like, oh my God, amazing. And I was like, great. It was a huge salary bump. And I was like, whoa. And then I had people working under me. So I took the job. And I remember when I told my friend that at lunch, like she was like, what? And I was like, yeah, I know. And then I started to feel really awkward because here we have been trash talking the whole organization. And now I'm going to be a manager and kind of on the other team, you know, like,
well, I was going to say, were you going to be managing her?
No, I wasn't going to be managing her, but it was like, I would be sitting now in a different part of the office, you know, and it was just like, I'm with them now. And that friendship devolved very quickly. And honestly, it was very awkward because although she was not directly reporting to me, still, like, as I said, it was very much like decision makers and then the people that work for the decision makers. And like, that also was just kind of representative of an unhealthy office atmosphere anyways, but it was super complicated and I really felt bad. I think the thing is you have to go into these relationships with eyes wide open and just be very aware of like how much you want to be friendly. I think being open to really being warm and cordial and like kind of like being super professional, but not a robot, you know, like also letting people into like human side of you, I think is really important. And look, if you meet somebody that you absolutely like, you're just like, oh my God, this person is amazing. I would never say say, like, don't be friends with them. Just, I wouldn't jump into anything too quickly, because the consequences, if you fall out, are you're facing them every day. Like, you don't have the opportunity to then, unless you're going to quit, you don't have the opportunity to like totally take somebody out of your life.
I mean, you spend more hours at work than you do at home most times.
Right. Yeah. So that's like, it's just a double-edged sword. That's why if things are going bad, it's just absolutely terrible, because you do spend so much time. It would be amazing if you could find a couple of people that you really kind of gel with, feel like you have the same sensibility with, and you feel like you're happy to see them every day. Because that makes a huge difference than going into an office where you're like, these aren't my people.
Totally. So it's not a one size fits all. And I guess it's going to be up to the people listening, you know, to set their own boundaries.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing too. It's like, we hear so much about boundaries and they're so important, but so much of us, so many of us haven't done the upfront work to even understand what our boundaries really are. It's like, we only know what they are when they've been crossed. And so that's very reactive. And so, and also that's factoring in that, like, you should assume that the other person knows what your boundaries are. Like, and there are some obvious things, but like your personal, like, bandwidth for different things, nobody, only you can inform that, right? So I always say, like, the best friendships start with you, and you have to be able to understand and answer clearly these four questions. Who am I? Where am I? How did I get here? And where do I want to go? And until you have those four questions really answered, and this isn't something, don't scribble this down, this is something that should be a work in progress for like a couple weeks. Until you have those answers, you know, firmly and satisfactorily answered, it's almost impossible to get the right people in your life. You're out there just kind of collecting people blindly, right? Because these relationships, friendships, are really the chance to be supported and seen. And again, I like, they can be the vessels that help you show up the way you want to show up in the world. But if you don't know how you want to show up in the world, that is very hard to accomplish. And so the first step is you and doing that work. And that applies to boundaries. Like, again, really being clear, what are my non-negotiables? What are my must-haves? What are the gray areas? And then communicating those either energetically or literally. Like, I'm this kind of person and this is the space I need. I'm not a phone person. Text me. And those are just like little things, obviously, but they're much bigger things to have draw boundaries around. But until you understand what you are not being fully intentional, and you're really, you know, putting guesswork on the other person.
Did you miss Iconic 22? Feeling some FOMO? Don't worry. Catch up on all the amazing and inspiring talks from speakers like Venus Williams, Tabitha Coffey, and more with Iconic On Demand. Head over to iconic.vegaro.com to start watching. Then get pumped to join us at next year's Iconic Conference.
So you really do think that this requires a conversation with coworkers, with friends, like let them know your boundaries?
Friends, generally, yes. But if you have had a relationship that is of any kind of length of time, so like 3 years, 5 years, if you've met somebody, you've been friends with them for 6 weeks or 6 months, do you need to have a big conversation about breaking up? No, not really. I don't think ghosting is the right answer, but I do think sending something out like, listen, it's been so great, you know, hanging out. I don't have the bandwidth right now to do this. And I don't want to keep disappointing you. You know, when you're reaching out to making plans, I'm just being honest, like, you know, from a bandwidth perspective, I just don't have capacity to like do this. However you've been doing it, fill in the blank. But if it's somebody you've been friends with for 10 years, like, yeah, you got to have a conversation. There is one case, and this isn't ghosting. There's a natural ebb and flow of relationships, right? And if you are remotely interested in self-growth and evolving, which I think you probably are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you're going to change, right? You're going to go in different directions from some of the people that have been in your life. That does not mean you're in a better place or a worse place. It just means a different place, right? They've evolved in one direction. You've evolved in another direction. If you have the same expectation around this relationship in the fact that you've just plans and contact have been fewer and fewer and fewer and farther in between, there's nothing to do. That is the natural ebb and flow. You don't want to like all of a sudden draw a line in the sand and call this person and say, it's over. Well, that's foolish because there's nothing going on there anyways, right? You both kind of have let this go the natural course of things. That's assuming you're not harboring any frustrations or anger or whatever, you know, that you just are not wanting to talk about. That's something totally different. Yeah. That's totally something different, right? The scenario, though, where you do have to say something is if you're flowing out one way And the other person is not hip to the fact that you guys are flowing in different directions. In other words, that person keeps reaching out to you, keeps messaging you, keeps trying to involve you in plans. And your frustration and irritation is growing, being like, what doesn't this person get? I'm odd. This is like embarrassing. Like I basically said no or not responded like 10 times and she keeps texting me. And then the other person is like probably having her feelings hurt and like feels really still invested in this, but you guys are not on the same page. And so if you've been, if that relationship has been of any consequence or any length, I think you do owe it to the relationship to say, get on a call or however you guys naturally communicate and say, listen, this is what I've noticed. This relationship has been so valuable to me for X, Y, and Z reason. What I'm faced with right now is just where I'm at in my life. I don't have capacity or bandwidth. It is not a reflection of how I felt. It is a reflection of the deep respect I hold for you in this relationship that I just can't give it the time that I feel like that you can. And I don't want to hurt your feelings. I want the driving memory of this relationship to be about how special it was when it was working, not the irritation or the guilt or the frustration, trying to drag it into a different era that it doesn't fit into.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. In your experience, when you text that or you say that to that friend, how have they responded?
I think if you craft something that's respectful, and again, if you are going to have a conversation with them either on the phone or face-to-face, it probably, if it's a phase-out situation, would be on the phone. You want to have rehearsed a little bit what you're going to say. You know, you're going to be a little nervous. You're very easy to get knocked off course and say the wrong thing or not say what you mean. You need to understand the other person, right? The idea when talking to them about this is that you are clear and the information lands. So if you're talking to a friend that's generally rational and reasonable and not overly emotional, then I think you always want to lead with the thing that's kind of has the highest degree of respect built in, and that is on the phone or FaceTime or whatever, right? It's the scariest thing to do, but it is the thing that I think is the most respected when you get off the phone. As upset as that person can be, in reflection, there's something there about the courage it takes to do that that is really, it kind of softens the blow, I have to say. The truth is that there's no possibility. If you're feeling terrible or irritated or whatever in a relationship by definition is relational. There's no way, honestly, the other person can be feeling great in it. Now, they may lie, they may not have awareness around it, but it is a two-way street, right? And so having the courage to end this, even if you're the person that is the one that wants to get out of it and you're feeling irritated and kind of guilty because you're not doing what this person wants, the flip side of that is that person has got to feel terrible that they keep trying to interact with you and you don't want to do it, right? So it works for both of you to get out of this. Now, the exception to this is if you know that the person that you are dealing with has trouble processing emotions, if they have big emotions, if they're defensive, if they're reactive, if you have like a voice call or a FaceTime, chances are they're going to feel really attacked and defensive. And what that means is that whatever message you are set trying to communicate is going to be thrown right back at you. In other words, they're not going to receive anything except for a feeling of hurt or anger or whatever. So in that case, what you're going to want to do is write a very nice, fairly concise email, again, saying basically the same messaging, but so that the person can read it, have their big emotion, maybe fire off something not that nice back, and then calm down and a couple of days later have something to come back to so that that message can land, assuming they don't delete it and then never retrieve it. But that's your best option in order in having that message land. And that's what it's about. It's about communicating, right? And getting whatever medium gets that message across better. So you really do have to know your audience. And in the book, you know, in the chapter on breaking up with friends, I think I have five or six conversation starters of how to like write that email or start that conversation on the phone based on very general sources of conflict.
Now, your book is not all about breaking up with friends. You also talk about how someone can become a better friend themselves. So what insight can we do within to do that?
Well, I think the first thing is the starting point is you. And that is getting very clear on who you are, how you want to show up in the world, what your non-negotiables are, and then finding the words and the confidence to self-advocate. and be clear. Now, the people that are currently in your life are probably going to receive a bit of pushback, right? People don't like change. People like the way, you know, the normal course of doing business, especially if this is about boundaries, right? But if the relationship is even remotely worth its salt, it will come back. There'll be an initial kind of adjustment friction, possibly. Sometimes it's not. Some people say, oh, thanks for letting me know. Wow, great. And they feel just immediately closer to you, right? And then some people just won't be able to get on board with it at all. They've got a weakened sense of ego. They've got whatever their own anxieties. You have to be aware that that is a consequence of choosing yourself. Sometimes when you choose yourself, other people don't choose you, and that's okay. That's a great, wow, great liberty. Freedom. I just freed up some space to bring the right people in.
Totally.
So that's the first step. The second step is just really watching how you're behaving yourself. Like, what role do you play in these relationships? What, when you look at the landscape of your friendships, what's missing for you? Have you created an echo chamber? In other words, everybody looks like you and sounds like you. If so, you need to open up the aperture and create a lot more diversity in your world, different life experiences, different religious upbringings, sexual orientation, age, whatever. You want to have the most dynamic group you can, because friendships are these relationships which, when you relate to somebody on that level, it opens up a different part of you. And so the more kind of quote unquote color, I don't mean that literally. I mean, the more, you know, the more Pantone colors, the more you open, the colors are unlocked within you, right? Different shades, different opinions, different points of view. This only serves to open you up and your mind and your
potential. Become a more well-rounded person.
Absolutely. Have a deeper understanding of humanity, and as a result, a deeper understanding of self. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like the magic of these relationships. And then you've got to say, and now how am I showing up? You have to understand that we live in a culture right now where, like, we expect everybody to be everything, especially with romantic partners, right? Like, they've got a co-parent. You're not just talking about workouts. You're doing yoga with them. You are every co-worker that they were, you know, the stories of every, they know the stories of, and you expect them to be this rock. Problem is, only you can be everything to yourself. Nobody else can be everything to you. So you want to be really intentional. Like, this is my romantic relationship, right? This fulfills X, Y, and Z in me. Let me go out and look actively for friendships that fill in the blanks. And so, like, an example is, what, based on who I am I missing, right? So, like, I'm somebody that's very introverted, and I could stay home every single night without question, and happily so. But I need a couple of friends that are extremely extroverted, who will drag me out once a month, once a quarter. And every time I'm like so irritated, I'm like, God, why did I make plans? Da, da, da. And then I get there and I have such an incredible time. And I come back, and instead of being exhausted, like I always think I'm going to be, I have a new sense of like energy, a new sense of perspective. And I take that into everything I do. Now, I can't do that every night, but it is super important for me to have a friend or two like that, that can pull me out of my kind of innate sense of being. Because otherwise you kind of get just locked in to who you are, right? You got to have a friend that you can pick up the phone and call at 3 a.m. no matter what. That's like imperative, right? Do you have that person that you can call? A mentor friend, a friend that can really, you're not necessarily, you know, going out and having elaborate dinners with, or you're not necessarily going to their wedding, but like key life decisions, that's the person you're calling. And then in that relationship, what am I bringing? I'm probably not mentoring back, but what am I doing for this person, right? And really understanding your role is very, very, the clearer you can get in these relationships, the more activated they're going to be. And then you want to look at your own behavior. You know, we are a society that is extremely distracted. There's a lot of chaos. And so, you know, when you meet your friend, are you sitting there scrolling through Instagram or checking work emails while also kind of got one ear to what they're saying? You're doing a lot of nothing in that, in that scenario, right? You're not connecting with this person. You're not, there's no way you're picking up on nonverbal cues. So like often people are saying one thing, but like their energy or the way their body language is conveying a totally different message. That's the one a friend picks up on, right? But if you're sitting there on your phone, you know, doing other stuff, then you're missing all of that. I can guarantee you're not doing a very great job of whatever you're doing on your phone. So it's like a lot of nothing. So just like really being present and like, I understand, I'd rather meet with somebody for half an hour with a phone to the side, as opposed to like, let's have a night out that's 4 hours, but we really don't connect in any way, right? Because we're very distracted. We're at a loud restaurant. There's a lot of stuff going on. And the whole experience is more exhausting than it is restorative.
100%. And something that you said in the beginning of the podcast too, that in romantic relationships, we put in the work. We put in the effort. We go out of our way for them. We get them a gift and we try to make them feel special. We can't forget that friendship is still a relationship too. We have to do all those things for our friends to be a better friend.
Absolutely. That showing of appreciation, that showing of gratitude.
That effort.
And that effort. And I was like the guiltiest person of all. Like there was nobody happier on planet Earth than when I receive a text like at 4:30 in the afternoon being like, I'm so sorry, I have to postpone. And I would be like, yes. And it's like, wait, stop. What is that? Like, I should want to make the effort here, right? I should want to do this. And you should want to do that. If you really, really don't want to do that time and again, this isn't the right relationship for you. You need to pick up on it. But you have to factor in first, is this not the right relationship for me? Or am I just really being lazy and, again, expecting this relationship to be something that gives, and I don't have to work for?
Yeah.
Because I can guarantee you I wouldn't have the same reaction if I was dating somebody and they cancel. I'd be like, oh my God, what's wrong? You know what I mean? Yeah. Oh, I got to get this back on track. How can I, you know what I mean? And it's like, let me put in the work to like, see if I can.
You're so right.
Ignite this.
Mm-hmm. In chapter 4 of your book, you talk about the anatomy of a good friendship. Can you talk about what that means?
Yeah, it's just kind of the non-negotiables that go in the recipe, the ingredients that go into the recipe of good friendship. And that's like vulnerability, positivity, commitment, consistency, active listening, you know, talking about picking up nonverbal cues. And really, when somebody's talking, listening and not just listening to the words they're saying, what is the subtext? What is the context? All of the supporting energy around it, really tuning into that person, and also demanding that you, and the reciprocal is also very true. So it's not just that you do that, but you demand the other person show up in the same way. And I don't mean like
the man,
you know, with like it's not like that modeling behavior of being present. This is amazing when you just show up in that way. People kind of do rise to the occasion, right? But if they don't, calling it out, I feel like you're distracted. Is there a better time for us to meet? That'll get somebody's attention. That's not a big call out. You know, that's not a big throwdown, but it's like, oh, wait, I'm present. So just those subtle things of doing these things, they don't have to be big things. Again, like the breakup, that's like the last line of defense. It's how can we do these relationships a lot better and just make sure we're in the right relationships? Because if we're not, you need to free up the space to bring the right, to call the right people in. But a lot of that can be achieved by smaller, subtler things, as opposed to like these a big sit down where everything's on the line. Again, that's like the last line of defense.
What are your thoughts on as we get older, it's harder to make friends? You know, when we're growing up, we're in school, we're around our friends all day, we're in sports, we're in activities. And now in this day and age, we're working from home, we're remote. I know like my sister is going through that right now. She just graduated college. She got her first job and it's remote. So from going from college, being surrounded in your dorm room and around the people to now being remote, she's found herself, and I'm just using her as an example, she's found herself feeling alone and having a hard time making friends. So as we get older, Erin, do you have any advice on best ways to get closer or find new friends as an adult?
Yes, definitely. And I'm going to bring your attention back to the dating situation. We have to start getting, because loneliness is a huge epidemic.
Yes.
And it was becoming a huge epidemic before COVID and the pandemic. And that just blew things out of the water, right? This at-home working, this, and you know, the self-isolation and all, you know, all of that stuff. It also cost a lot of friendships because friendships started, you know, people started making choices. Like when you got taken out of the IRL and it's like, oh wait, do I really miss this person? Do I really want to do a Zoom happy hour? I'm not sure. Like, you know, and so there's just some natural attrition out of that in your friendship. So a lot of people are finding themselves with less friends, more isolated. And so if you want something, go and get it. And what I'm talking about with that is very akin to the dating situation, right? What's the first thing? And I said this a little bit before, but it bears repeating. When you decide I need new friends, or I need a friend, or I need friendship support, much like when you decide I'm putting myself back out on the market, what is the first thing you do? You tell other friends. You tell other people in your life. Maybe it's you, for your sister to you. Hey, I'm looking for friends. This is what I'm doing. It's my first job. I could really use somebody in the same boat, you know, somebody that's going through the same thing. I was talking to a woman who is a new mom who is in the throes of starting her new business, her first entrepreneurial experience. And she was really feeling lost. And I said, you got to ask your existing people in your life. Do you know anybody else that's just started a business that also would be great if they had small children? I would love to meet them. I would love to connect with them because there's such a shared experience there. So whatever you're looking for, first line of defense, put it out to your immediate circle, friends and family. And I know that sounds weird, but it doesn't sound weird at all when you're saying, hey, I'm looking for a romance. I'm looking to date.
So right.
That's literally the first thing you do. Know anybody? And so that it starts there. And then you have to reorient the way we think about this, right? So like, let's say you have a dog. Instead of walking your dog around the block, where's the nearest dog park? Go there. You're with a group of people that you know at least have one thing in common. You like dogs. You're walking your dogs. Mm-hmm. You want to throw a ball to your dog, right? When you show up there, just like when if you were looking for dating, right? If you were looking to date somebody and you arrive at a work event or at a cocktail party, you look around the room and you go, anybody interesting here? Anybody I feel like any sort of vibe off here? It is literally the same thing. Now, you're not looking to end up in bed with the friend, but it's more like energetically, right?
Yeah.
Anybody I'm curious about at this dog park? Oh, she looks kind of cool. Throw your ball over there. Walk over there. There's such easy conversation, right? Oh, cool. I love your dog. What breed, you know, how old is he? How long have you had? Whatever. Very easy conversation starters, right? Yeah. See if you're picking a vibe up. If you are, go again. If you see her again, walk. It's literally the same mechanism. And I was telling this to somebody else and they're like, well, what are you saying? Like after you see them a couple times, you go, hey, do you want to have a coffee, like a date? I go, yeah, that's so weird. Yeah, it is until it's not.
Yeah.
Until that's the way it is. Because remember dating like 50 years ago was not like it is right now.
No.
It's like worlds different, right? But the conversations, what's helped propel it forward is that people are talking about it, what they don't like about what it was, what they do like about what it was. And all of a sudden, these conversations start shaping processes, right? But we're not doing that around friendship. So yes, if you find somebody you like and they seem interesting and you seem interesting to them, say, hey, do you want to grab a coffee after this or whatever? What's the worst they're going to say? No, you're a weirdo. Okay, next. I guess that's not your person. You know what I mean? If you like jogging, if you're a jogger, don't just jog around the block. Find a running club. Again, at least one thing you know you have in common with these people. They like to run. They probably are taking care of their health, like another thing that they might, you know, you might have in common. So you don't have to do that every time you run, but once a week, meet up with a bunch of other joggers.
Yeah.
Sniff out the room. Anybody interesting here? Ah, yes, Kelly. She does the 4K, so do I. Let's run together and maybe we can talk. You know, and it seems so rudimentary, but you just need to put your energy out there,
yeah.
Right? In that way, I am looking for friends. I need friends. I want friends. And then put yourself in the best case scenario, which is, in my opinion, something you've got in common, and take it from there.
It sounds so simple, but our minds, we make it sound so
Our minds make
hard.
It feel like that's so weird.
Yeah.
But, and that's the problem. So what do you think is going to happen? You're going to sit at home on your computer working from home and friends are going to how are you going to manifest
exactly.
these friendships?
Exactly.
You got to go out and get them. You want them? Go get them. They're there. And guaranteed, other people are feeling the exact same, right? Everybody is kind
Everybody
of feeling the same
way.
It's up to you to take action. And not everybody you meet in these scenarios are going to become your immediate best friend, right? You got to be prepared for that too. There'll be some hits and misses, but you will get to a place where you meet two or three people that you're really happy you made the effort for.
I love that. And I feel like that's an amazing closing note right there. But before I let you go, we're going to play a quick game. I play this on every podcast. It is called Taylor's Would You Rather. So I made seven Would You Rather questions and I made them about you. So they won't be too difficult.
Okay.
And then you only have 3 seconds to answer each one.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Okay. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. Here we go. Would you rather write another book or go on tour as a stand-up comedian?
Stand-up comedian.
Would you rather be a guest on Joe Rogan's podcast or Call Her Daddy's podcast?
Joe Rogan.
Would you rather have to cancel on a friend last minute or cancel on a podcast guest last minute?
I'd rather cancel a podcast guest.
Would you rather write a screenplay with Woody Allen or with Quentin Tarantino?
Woody Allen.
Would you rather break up with your husband's best friend for him, or would you rather break up with your son's best friend for him?
My son's.
Would you rather sing during your comedy skit or only be able to mime during your comedy skit?
Sing.
Okay, last one. Would you rather be remembered as the best author in the world or the best comedian in the world?
The best comedian.
Oh my gosh. Well, Erin, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. We didn't really get to talk about your comedy, but are you still doing that?
I've taken a long break, but I'm thinking about getting back into it. It's one of my great loves.
You should. You should definitely get back into it. What do you have to lose? And you could talk about your book.
Exactly. Thank you so much. I really appreciated this.
Bye, Erin.
Bye.
Our goal is to always give you the content you didn't know you needed to know, and to make sure you're always on point. I'm Taylor Burke. Thank you for listening.